Good evening and welcome to the 21st Legislative District Live Telephone Town Hall. My name is Lilia and I'll be moderating tonight's call. Thanks for taking the time to join us. We hope you will find this call informative. In a moment, I'll turn the phone over to State Representative Lillian Ortiz-Self and Senator Marco Elias for some opening remarks. But first, I want to explain the format for tonight's call. If you want to ask a question, please press star 3 on your phone and you'll be connected with a staff person who will take your question and get you into the queue to speak directly with lawmakers. Please note this is a live question and answer session. By pressing star 3 on your phone right now, you'll have an opportunity to speak directly with your legislators. We want to get through as many of your questions as possible during this call, so we have to limit participants to only one question each. Pressing star 3 right now is all you need to do to ask your question. Now, here is some information on your legislators. Senator Marco Elias has represented the 21st District since 2008. During his time in the House, Marco worked to make communities stronger through good transportation policy choices, great schools and classrooms safe from bullying, and a strong economy with good-paying jobs, including bolstering our clean energy economy. Marco is a graduate of Kamiak High School, Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and has studied public administration at the University of Washington's Evans School of Public Affairs. He volunteers with the Kamiak High School debate team and serves on the board of the Youth Suicide Prevention Program. He is currently serving in the Senate Natural Resource and Parks Committee, the Trade and Economic Development Committee, and the Transportation Committee. Remember, press star 3 on your phone right now to ask a question. Representative Lillian Ortiz-Self was appointed to represent the 21st District earlier this year. She holds a Master's in Public Administration and a Master's in Counseling, and she works as a counselor at North Middle School. She has served as the Clinical Director of a Mental Health Center, Regional Coordinator for the Illinois State Board of Education, Education Advisor for the Department of Children and Family Services, and Director and Founder of the CU Project, a center for Latino families and youth. In her freshman year at the legislature, Lillian is serving in three House committees, Early Learning and Human Services, Environment, and Transportation. Lillian lives in Mukilteo with her husband, and they have three children. Remember, press star 3 on your phone right now to ask a question. And now, here are your lawmakers with some opening remarks.
Thank you, Lilia. This is Senator Marco Elias calling, and it's exciting to call you It's my first telephone town hall as your new senator since January when Paul Shin, our wonderful senator, retired. I've had the privilege of serving the 21st District. And I will just say that it was a special honor to take the spot of our friend Paul Shin. You know, he was a mentor and a great role model for me, and I've been working hard to try and fill his shoes over the last few months. And this was a very whirlwind session. We actually, for the first time in many years, finished our legislative session on time without the need for any special sessions. And we were able to get a couple of core things done. In particular, I was proud to work with my new colleague, Lillian, to secure funding for the Mukilteo Park and Ride in our transportation budget. So we're going to be seeing that project move forward. We also worked to make sure that we make another payment on our commitment to public education. And the Supreme Court has told us that we have more to do, but I'm proud that in this year's budget we made some more progress in that regard. Clearly a lot of issues on the horizon coming up, and I look forward to hearing your priorities as well for the district. And in fact, you can press star 3 at any time to get in that queue to share your priorities or ask a question. But the three issues that I continue to make a priority as we move forward are supporting our small businesses, to make sure that we're creating jobs here in our local communities, also investing in our transportation system, and that means investing in our roads and bridges and our highways, but also investing in safe routes to school for our kids, investing in bus service so that we can hopefully bring back Sunday bus service in Snohomish County in the next few years, and making sure that our ferry system is whole and operational as well. And the final priority, which is my highest priority, is our public schools. I was proud to be the son of immigrants that made it through our great Mukilteo public schools and got a great education. I want to make sure that the next generation of kids is getting that same high-quality education in small classes with well-prepared teachers and meeting the high standards that our jobs and our workforce demand as we compete internationally. So those are my priorities. Like I said, I look forward to hearing yours. You can press star 3 to get in that queue and share those priorities at any time. And now I just want to take a special moment to welcome my friend and our new state representative, Lillian Ortiz-Self.
Thank you very much, Senator Elias. It is my pleasure to serve in his seat when it became open on January 21st. Marco and I have worked for years together on numerous issues. One especially was education. As a school counselor and someone who's been working with children and families across child-serving systems for over 20 years, my priority is to make sure that children are successful. They are our future, and we must invest in them if we are going to have a strong economy. And so as a school counselor, I also know that children don't come to us in a vacuum. They come to us with multiple needs and family needs. And if we want a strong middle class, we must have strong families. And that includes transportation, living wage jobs, mental health services, education services where all children are succeeding, health care, clean air, clean water, all these issues are very important to our families in order for them to be able to succeed, and they're important to us. And so I am thrilled to be given this opportunity to do that. In my first session, I introduced and was very happy to say that I passed my student success bill. And that bill is going to help target across the state of Washington where the highest needs and concentration of our children who have numerous barriers are located, so that we can start to not just fully fund education, but to make sure that those dollars are going to the targeted areas where kids need it the most, and to be very strategic about how we put those dollars in. That is one of the reasons I decided to run. I want to make sure that my direct experience of working with children, their voice, and my family's voices are taken to Olympia to make sure that we impact policy. And I want to make sure that we fully fund education, but not off the backs of our safety nets, but making sure that we do it in a way that's responsible and in a way that is going to be strategic and get us the most bang for our dollars. So, again, it is my honor. I am thrilled to be here and to serve the 21st. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Marco and Lillian. And so right now, folks, we have a lot of people on the call, which is great. So if you have a question, please press *3 on your keypad, and you will get on the queue. So first we have a poll question for you. What do you think about this? Is the current state of roads, bridges, ferries, and transit adequate, or do you think the state should invest more in transportation? If you think it's adequate, please press 1. If you think more is needed, please press 2 now. Now we're going to go with our first caller. And remember, *3 if you have a question. First caller is Lori, and she has a question about educational opportunities. Lori, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great. Please ask your question.
Yeah, I want to know why the educational quality is so vastly different between Mariner High School and Kamiak. They're in the same district. Everything from the drama program to the fact that Kamiak kids can take Japanese to the sports, it just seems like Kamiak, they're given everything, and Mariner, they're given next to nothing. And we're in the same district, and we're paying the same property taxes.
This is Representative Lillian Ortiz-Self, and I want to say that that's a very good question. And we see that across the state. I happen to not, my children go to the Mukilteo School District, but I work in the Everett School District. I see it there as well, this huge disparity between some schools and others. And it has to do around, I know some of it has to do with the tax base around the school and whether there's a lot of apartments and less tax base that feed into those schools. But for me, it goes bigger than that. It's an equity issue. All kids, we are mandated in the state of Washington to provide a free and an appropriate education for all children. And when some children are getting more and others are getting less, it is an equity issue. And so we need to make sure that when we're fully funding education, we're filling in those gaps to make sure that all our children have the right services that they need and the opportunities to all be successful.
All right. Thank you very much. So let's see, folks. The poll is still going. Is the current state of roads, bridges, ferries, and transit adequate, or do you think the state should invest more in transportation? If you think everything is good and it's adequate, please press 1. If you think more is needed, please press 2. And remember, please press *3 on your keypad if you have a question for your lawmakers. We're going to go now with Karen, who has a question about coal trains.
Hi, this is Karen Liu. I live in Linwood, but I spend a lot of time in Edmonds, and I know there's been great concern about the coal trains operating that go down the coast, especially as we hear more and more about coal trains in other parts of the country blowing up. And I'd like to know what the status of the situation is in our area.
Karen, that's a really good question, and this is Senator Leas here. You know, there's two different kinds of trains that are moving commodities that I have concerns about. One is the trains that are moving coal, and really the coal train-related issues are around traffic and the questions about what are the environmental impacts of moving all that coal through our communities. The second issue that you also referenced is the new oil trains that are coming through, and those are the ones that have the risk of fire and, in some cases, you know, more catastrophic things. And you know, on both those issues, the state is undertaking review on the coal trains. We're taking a look at a proposal to build a coal terminal up near Bellingham, and the state's doing a comprehensive review of the impacts of that. So as we wait for that review, we're going to collect more evidence and really get a sense for what those impacts will be before allowing those permits to be issued to build the new terminal. On oil trains, you know, the export facilities are already constructed, so those oil trains are moving through our community already. And the real question there is, do our fire departments and our first responders have enough information about the number of trains and how to respond to a disaster around one of those trains? And I think the answer we've heard pretty clearly from folks around the state is no. Our first responders need more tools. They need more information. And this is something that we tried to address this session through legislation, but we weren't able to come to agreement on an approach. And so as we move forward next year, I really want to make sure that we're passing tough new regulations to make sure that as oil is transported, flammable oil from North Dakota that's more flammable than other types of oil we've seen in other places, that our fire departments have the specialized equipment to respond if there's a disaster or a crash or a derailment or a fire, and that our state is getting the appropriate information on the number of shipments and when they're coming so that our first responders can be ready with that information. So those are the two different updates on oil trains and coal trains. I really appreciate the question.
Folks, if you just joined us, this is your 21st District lawmakers holding a telephone town hall for you. Representative Lillian Ortiz-Self and Senator Marco Leas. If you have a question for either of them or for both of them, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. We're going to go with Rebecca, who has a question about, let's see, Citizens United. Not so sure. Rebecca, can you hear me? Rebecca?
Yes?
Hey, there you are. Please ask your question. You're on the air.
I'm sorry, I had to take another call for a moment. Yes, today I was in a League of Women Voters meeting. We're studying the Citizens United case, trying to get evidence about the impacts on people in and our government in Washington State, because it's quite a process, and we hope at some point to get League of Women Voters support to oppose Citizens United, the impacts, the negative impacts. So in our state, we heard today that there is a person in the legislature who's working on a bill to weaken the CDC requirements for disclosure and, you know, transparency. And so what do you know about that, and what would your position on it be?
That's a good question, Rebecca, and I certainly know you from your great work on campaign finance reform and improving transparency, so I appreciate you calling in and participating. You know, there are a number of proposals every year to change the way that campaign donations are reported, and some of those would try and loosen or weaken the reporting requirements. Some are trying to strengthen and improve transparency. Fortunately, we didn't see any legislation move through the process that would reduce transparency or loosen the requirements for reporting campaign donations. And I know Lillian and I both are committed to making sure that voters know exactly who's donating, not just to our campaigns, but to all campaigns, so that you can evaluate that as you make your decision. And a strong system of transparency is a good way to keep lawmakers and politicians accountable and to make sure that we know who's contributing to what across the state. So we didn't see any legislation move forward that would have harmed that, and certainly I am personally committed to making sure that we don't weaken our strong public disclosure.
Well, I think it's in the works for next year.
There's bills every year around this just because it is such a popular subject. And, you know, as those bills come forward, if they're going to reduce public transparency or reduce the disclosure, you know, it's not going to be something I'm supporting.
Thank you very much. Folks, if you have a question, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. So we've got the results of the poll. 25% of you think that the current state of roads, bridges, and ferries is adequate, and 75% of you think that more is needed. So, let's see, do my lawmakers have any comments about that?
Yes, this is Representative Lillian Ortiz-Self, and I think I would have to agree with the 75%. When, you know, we don't live that far away from Skagit County. We saw when that bridge collapsed. I have seen figures that indicate that there are numerous other bridges that are in the same rating as the bridge in Skagit. We have to make sure we maintain our infrastructure. In Edmonds, even in Edmonds, the amount of traffic that we get in through our railroads are astonishing to me. The backlog and congestion and traffic because of it. We have to be looking at that kind of infrastructure and how do we fix it, how do we make it better, how do we maintain it. I think that there's numerous needs. This last session we approved, I sit on the Transportation Committee, we approved the building of another ferry. We need to be able to maintain our current ferry system. There is some work to be done in order to maintain our infrastructure. Totally agree with the 75%, and we'll keep trying to push for that.
All right, thank you very much. Folks, press star 3 on your keypad if you have a question. So let's see, we are now going to go with Sherry, who has a question about standard of living.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the opportunity to ask this question. My husband and I feel like we're sort of in the minority. It's not fashionable to be a conservative. We've worked our whole lives and saved our whole lives to have a standard of living, and it's very special for us to live in Mukilteo. We love it. But with, I would like to know specifically what these two are doing to keep the amount of entitlements down, the amount of spending down. I don't even pay attention to the local news. It's so frustrating for me. I don't even watch the national news anymore. I feel totally left out. I have no one that listens to me and no one that represents me. So I would like to know what Marco and, I'm sorry, the other person,
Lillian,
are doing to help us, who I feel are now the minority.
Well, Sherry, I appreciate that question. And I think that, you know, across the political spectrum, whether you consider yourself more conservative or more progressive, you know, I think that there are some common things that unite us, and I'll just talk a little bit about the values that I bring. One is I think that we need to make sure that our state government is efficiently using our resources. I think Republicans and Democrats alike are opposed to waste in government and government programs that aren't serving the function that they were intended to. So I've worked very hard. One concrete example is, you know, I read an article in the Seattle Times a couple years ago about how the State Department of Transportation was opening a museum dedicated to the Alaskan Way Viaduct. And I thought that was just not the best use of our taxpayer dollars. And so I went to work to make sure that we don't create museums to our transportation projects anymore, that we put the dollars into actually building roads and bridges and highways. So that's a concrete example of tackling waste in government. The other thing is I think we're united by our desire to make sure that we have a strong business climate so that we have private sector jobs that are being created and providing opportunities. And I've been working hard to try and extend our state's research and development tax credit to help innovative startup companies create jobs and locate. We've got a great company called Uni Energy right in Mukilteo that's producing large-scale batteries for utilities and energy storage that I think will be a part of some really creative clean energy solutions moving forward. So those are some things I think we agree on. You know, the question of entitlements really is more of a federal issue. Social Security and Medicare, those programs are federal programs. I support them, but I think you're right that we need to be careful about making sure we're paying for the promises and commitments we keep. So that's sort of my take on some of your questions. I think we don't necessarily agree on everything, Sherry, but I think we agree on more than we give ourselves credit for sometimes.
Yes, and this is Lillian, and I just have to echo that I think both Marco and I are going into this reminding our members and our caucuses that efficiency is crucial. That is the reason why I passed my student success bill, because we have to put in, we are mandated by law through the McCleary decision to put in all these billions of dollars into education and fully fund it. But for me, it's never about dumping money into a system. It's about making sure we do it efficiently. It's about being accountable to make sure those dollars are used and where there are, and making sure that there is an effective outcome at the end of that. It is not okay to just meet the mandate, but what are the outcomes that we're trying to get? And that's always very important to me. So those are questions we ask. And, you know, when we look at both Marco and I value small businesses. That's important. There's hardworking people out there, much like I'm sure, Sherry, you and your husband, who have worked hard to have your standard of living. And we want to make sure that, that we respect that, that we value that. We know that it impacts our economy in great ways. And so efficiency is something that, that I definitely want to strive for. It's something that I want to make sure that, that we are held accountable for every dollar, every taxpayer dollar that we spend.
We're about halfway through our call right now, and we have a lot of people on the call. So if you have a question, please press star 3 on your keypad and be patient with us. We're trying to get through as many of your questions as possible. We're going to go with our second question. Do you think smaller class sizes improve learning? If you do, please press 1. If you don't, please press 2. Let's get that poll rolling. And while we do that, let's go with Leslie, who has a question precisely about class sizes. Leslie?
Yes.
Hi. Please ask your question.
Yes. My name is Leslie, and I'm a parent leader in the Edmond School District. And I feel fortunate to be in a great school district with great schools. But our class sizes are really hard to allow our students to learn at the optimum level, and it also really hurts our teachers. It's really hard to teach in a classroom of 32 second graders. And I can tell you that firsthand because my daughter was one of the second graders. And my question is, what is the status about reducing class size? I see a lot of information and questions about it in the news, but I'm not sure where we are in that and what Senator Elias and Representative Self-Ortiz are you guys doing to sort of move that along? Thank you.
Yes, this is Representative Lillian Ortiz Self, and let me tell you, as a school counselor, I am very passionate about making sure that we reduce our class sizes. Washington State is currently number 47th out of 50 states with the largest class sizes. I just went to a model program where they were showing us some great innovative things that were working and these great outcomes for these third graders, and it was wonderful. And the first question I asked was, what are the class sizes of your classes? And they said 17 children max. When you have 17 students max, you can give them individual attention. You can give them, you can be innovative and creative in the programming. You can make sure that every child receives their, has their needs met. But when you have 32 and 35 children in a classroom, it's outrageous. We just can't meet the needs. In our high schools, our teachers have over 150 students on their caseload. Our counselors have 450. We can't meet individual needs of children, and we know they're coming to us with those individual needs, and it is our responsibility. I always go back to a free and appropriate education, and that means that children come to us with individual needs, and we need to be able to pay attention to that. So a couple things that are happening. One, we want to make sure that the McCleary decision, that funding that we have to put in, goes in to reduce class sizes. That's very important to us. And secondly, we know that there's also an initiative that's going out there, but we're not going to go into that, that is also asking for smaller class sizes as well. And we're trying to, you know, there are groups out there that are trying to get as many, people to sign the petition as well. But want you to know that I definitely am a huge advocate for small class sizes. I know it's going to be one of the ways that we meet the mandate that the Supreme Court said we're failing in. And we're going to see some different outcomes when we do it.
All right. Thank you. If you have not voted on the poll, please do so now. Do you think smaller class sizes improve learning? If you do, please push 1. And if you do not, please push 2. So let's see. And if you have a question, of course, please press star 3. We are now going to go with Christine, who has a question about the minimum wage. Christine?
Yes, I'm here.
Please go ahead and ask your question.
Hi. It kind of addresses the lady who talked about entitlements. I believe a way to reduce entitlements is to have a larger wage base, which would start with higher wages. Seattle has their proposed $15 an hour minimum wage that they're trying to pass. Do we have anything statewide that is trying to address having a higher minimum wage as well?
That's a great question, Christine. And actually, there was a proposal in the legislature this year to increase our state's minimum wage, which is currently $9.32, to $12 an hour over the course of the next 3 years. So it would have phased that in. And I agree with you in principle that the best way to help people be self-sufficient is to pay them a fair wage for the work that they're doing. You know, for families that are earning $9.32, that means they need housing assistance and food stamps and subsidized child care, all sorts of other assistance just to survive. And if we want to really make sure that people can be self-sufficient, I think we need to pay them a living wage for the work they're doing and transition more people to work. And that's what a minimum wage increase would help us accomplish. Also, I think for a lot of folks on the call, maybe you're like me. When I was first in the economy, my first job, I was getting the minimum wage. And most of the other kids that were working at the bookstore I did were also getting the minimum wage. Well, today, folks that are getting minimum wage aren't high school students at a bookstore anymore. We see thousands of single moms across the state working minimum wage jobs, a lot of new immigrants to our state, both from around the country and from other countries. That come here are working minimum wage jobs. So it's no longer just teen workers that are getting this wage. It's folks that are trying to support a family or support themselves. And so providing some gradual increases to minimum wage so folks can actually survive on the income they're making, I think is one way that we can reduce spending on some of the other supports people need and really focus on folks getting that dignified wage for the work they're doing. So I appreciate the question. And the bill didn't pass this year. We're going to continue working on it moving forward. But I do think that this is one way to make sure that we're tackling income inequality and also providing people dignity through their work.
All right. Thank you very, very much. We're going to be closing this poll now. So let me tell you the results. This is very exciting. 82% of you do believe that smaller class sizes improve learning, and, well, 18 of you don't. So how about our lawmakers talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I think that it's intuitive. We know when you read any advertisement for a university or a preschool, they talk about their small class sizes as a net positive for the educational experience of kids. And yet, when we go to our K-12 schools, somehow we've allowed ourselves to become 47th in the country in class sizes, something we've really got to address. I was proud to offer legislation for the last 2 years to try and accomplish this. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the legislature to make it a priority, so I know if there's going to be a conversation about what's the best way to do this moving forward. And I look forward to really tackling this, and not just in kindergarten or first grade, but also taking a look at, you know, if we want our kids to learn science and math at the high school level, we can't cram them into classes of 35 in a math or science class where they're not getting the individualized attention when they're struggling. So small classes are important at the earliest grades, but they're also important as students work their way through the system so that they're learning the skills we need them to learn to be successful. So I'm glad that folks recognize that, and certainly it's something I'm going to keep working on.
Okay, thank you. If you have a question, please press star 3 on your keypad right now. We're going to go with Myra, who has a question about the DREAM Act.
Yes, thank you. I actually have a comment for Representative Ortiz Self. I reviewed the newsletter when you talked about the DREAM Act, just the description of it. My request is actually for a little better detail, a little bit more accurate description. I believe it was better resources, providing resources for children of illegal immigrants. And just in reading the description in the newsletter, it didn't state anything about that, so it would be hard for people just reading that to get a good idea of the detail in that DREAM Act. So just a request.
Okay. Thank you very much, Myra. I really appreciate those comments.
You're welcome.
Did you want me to expand a little bit on the DREAM Act, or...
No, I'm actually quite aware of it and been working with it when I was in school in 2004, 2005. It was an issue. So thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just looking for a little bit more in-depth description of that for District 21 citizens.
Sure. And I just want to make a quick comment about the DREAM Act that, again, I'm going to refer back to my experience in the school system and in the classroom. Numerous students would drop out because they didn't see themselves having a future or an opportunity to reach their dreams, thus the DREAM Act. And those children now will have that opportunity to be able to at least access some financial assistance and just starting to realize that higher education might be a possibility for them. And the changes that I have seen already since it's passed and in so many of the high school students has been amazing. So thank you for bringing that up, and that was a great question. And thank you for your comments.
All right, thank you. So let's see, we have a third poll for you. Do you think the state is doing enough to fully fund K-12 education? If you do, please press 1. And if you don't, if you think that we need to do more, please press 2. We still have around 20 minutes left of this call, so if you have a question, please get it in. Press star 3 on your keypad right now. We're going to now go with Janie. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Janie, who has a question about Sunday bus?
Yes.
Great. Please go ahead.
Well, it wasn't exactly. I was talking with one young woman who had small children, and I'm older than dirt. And we were talking about all the different people that would like the Sunday bus and how we both thought that it would actually be used more on Sunday than other days because of kids spending the night, you know, with friends and wanting to get back home on Sunday for school Monday, and elderly people wanting to go to church and all those kinds of things that take place on Sunday that aren't there on the rest of the week, and yet Sunday is when the county bus here doesn't run. And I'm in South Everett, and I was at the mall, and we were talking about this, and we ended up with maybe, I don't know, 15 or 20 people at least around us all talking about it and agreeing. So I thought maybe I should ask it in a public forum, you know.
Yeah, that's great. And I appreciate the question, Janie, because I get it a lot as I'm out there talking to folks in the community. And really the reason why we don't have bus service today is because of the recession and the impacts that had on our public transit agency, community transit. They depend on the sales tax. Yeah, to collect the revenue that it takes to run that bus company. And so when the economy hit, folks stopped buying stuff, and that sales tax money went away. And so one of the ways that they were, you know, cutting costs and trying to keep as much service as possible was to eliminate it on Sundays, because while we know that a lot of people ride the bus on Sundays, it's the lowest ridership day, so they're trying to really focus resources. But we all agree, Lillian and I and our team down in Olympia, that we need to bring back Sunday bus service and make sure that folks that are trying to go to church or trying to get to their job on Sunday, because a lot of folks have to work on Sundays, have the ability to move around the community. You know, it turns out about a third of the people in our community can't drive, either because they're too young or they're older and they don't like to drive anymore. There's a variety of reasons, and having good bus service is an important way to connect people in the community. So last summer, I had a proposal in the overall transportation investment package that we approved out of the House of Representatives that would have funded that Sunday service coming back right away. Unfortunately, I wasn't in the state Senate back then, but we couldn't get the state Senate to approve that bill, and so we weren't able to get those resources for community transit. But this is something that both Lily and I have talked about, that we're going to make sure this is a high priority as we move forward. We need to bring back Sunday service, and quite honestly, we need to grow transit service so that as we've got congested roadways on 164th, even the speedway gets incredibly congested. We need to make sure that we've got transit options for folks so that they can ride the bus instead of always having to be in their cars if they don't want to. So these are things that we're going to keep working on, and I appreciate the question, Janie, because you're exactly right. Those kids need the bus. So do folks that are older than dirt sometimes need the bus too, and I know that all of us hope to have good transit connections for people, and we'll keep working on it.
Thank you very much. If you have a question, you can still get it in, so please press star 3 on your keypad right now. We're going to go with Cindy, who is concerned about low scores in math and science and reading. So education. Cindy?
Yeah, hi there. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, good. Hi. Well, I know that there's a lot of talk about, you know, classroom size and things of that nature. But, you know, one of my concerns is there seems to be a lack of actual practical application in the courseroom. And I know that part of what the Khan Academy is doing online is being implemented and becoming very successful. And so, you know, there's always concern about, you know, testing and various things for the students, but not as much discussion of, you know, necessarily reevaluating or evaluating curriculum and practical application. And it's a proven fact because there have been teachers who have done it and have been incredibly successful in allowing kids to have very hands-on learning. Even if you look at the graduate program at Harvard University, you have to wait till you get to the graduate level to but it's incredible. The business program, they have the students working together and they're working on business projects, and believe it or not, they use Legos on some occasions to replicate various things that they're trying to display. And so it just seems like there is really something missing. And then as far as comprehension, you know, in any area of schooling, when the kids are not really being encouraged to look up the words in a dictionary, I'm middle-aged, and when I was a young child, I remember that there was a very large and prominent dictionary on a stand, and we used to be able to get up and go and look up words. And so there's a lot of meaning that is missing. I mean, if you ask several adults, I mean, what is the definition of mathematics or biology? Not very many people can actually tell you. Or what is the definition of science? And so when these kids have a lot of misunderstood words, they cannot move forward, you know, to a steeper and steeper gradient level. And so something has got to change. But we're looking for that magic bullet, but there really isn't one. The teaching has to be in applying practical application. If you're in mechanics and you're studying an engine, but you don't have an engine or you don't have a picture of an engine, then you're not gonna get very far. But that same thing holds true in so many other subjects. I remember when my son was in high school in Edmonds, and actually my son just made it on the Canadian PGA Tour very recently. Yay! But I asked his English teacher if he could write about something other than Shakespeare, because he had no interest in that, but he had an interest in stocks and in business and also in golf. and he was not allowed to write about those things. And when we have rigidity in the school systems where we don't have enough flexibility to allow kids to develop in a way that is unique to each student, we are totally lost as a not just as a community, but as a country. And there, like I said, there is no magic bullet. We have to go back to the basics. It's in practical application, and it's in learning and in reading, looking up the words of what you're studying. And I do not see that happening in the schools.
All right, Cindy, thank you very much for your question.
Yes, this is Lily, and thank you so much for that. I want to tell you that I totally agree with you. As an educator, there is no magic bullet. We are very much aware that this is multiple facets. It's a complex issue, and we need to look at it from very different areas. There is a reason why we lost the McCleary decision, why we have the McCleary decision, why we lost the lawsuit at the Supreme Court for not fully funding education, because these multiple facets are not in place. And there's different ones. It does start, I mean, one of the areas is smaller class sizes. When you have smaller class sizes, you can have practical applications in the classroom. It's really hard to have the multiple centers. It's hard to have them doing hands-on experiments when you have one teacher to 35. So that is part of the issue. But as we're looking at, the state of Washington is looking at the need for more STEM preparation, science, technology, engineering, math. Those areas for the future, we know those are the jobs of the future, and we need to make sure that our student, that we have a workforce, we're preparing students to fill the needs of that workforce. And we know that those areas have very much practical applications, hands-on, critical thinking kinds of skills that are needed, and we need to make sure that our curriculum meets that demand. So yes, we need to have professional development so our teachers can make sure they're teaching in a comprehensive critical thinking kind of way that utilizes practical application in the classroom. We need hands-on experiments. We need them to be prepared to teach the higher level science, technology, engineering, math classes. We need to build on all of that. And that is why we are pushing really hard to fully fund education, and again, but funding it in the areas that need it the most, and making sure that we're that we have the outcome base that we want to get for it.
All right, thank you. Let me give you the results of the poll since we're talking about education. 25% of you believe that the state is doing enough to fully fund K-12, and 75% of you believe that we need to do more. So there you go. We have about 13 minutes left of this call, so let's hurry up and go with our next question. And it is Rita, and she has a question about marijuana.
Rita, it's your turn. She'll be with you in a moment.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Rita. Please go ahead with your question.
Well, my question was, what are we going to do about our young people and their abuse of drugs? We just have such a time with seeing them, you know, and we know that heroin is on such a use, and then marijuana, and we're just wasting our youth. What are we going to do?
Rita, that's a really good question, and I actually, over the weekend or late last week, I participated in a training with some of our firefighters locally, and I asked one of the medics there about heroin issues in our community, and he was sharing that even in South Everett and in parts of our community, there's folks that are suffering from heroin overdoses and even in some cases losing their life. So it really is an issue even in communities like ours where maybe the rest of us don't necessarily notice it, but it's happening around us. And so making sure that we've got really comprehensive drug treatment opportunities is really important to me. In addition, we find that drug abuse and mental health conditions often go hand in hand. So making sure that we've got a system that provides not just drug treatment, but also mental health services to help folks get the counseling and support that they need so they don't have to resort to drugs and to medicating themselves when their life's in trouble, I think is really important. The final thing I'll say is when the voters approved the legalization of marijuana here a couple years ago, included in that was some pretty significant taxes on that marijuana that will be sold, sin tax, kind of like what we impose on cigarettes and on alcohol. And a huge portion of that new sin tax on marijuana is going to go to support health care and particularly mental health and chemical dependency treatment. So I'm hopeful that as we get more resources to bear, that we can take kids that are in trouble, that are suffering from drug addiction, and plug them into treatment programs that work to get their lives back on track. And that, I think, is the most important way. What we've found is that locking addicts up doesn't solve the problem. We really need comprehensive treatment and support for them. And so that's something I'm going to keep fighting for. Also, as we look at the marijuana initiative and it's implemented, we need to make sure that we don't see more kids using drugs, but we actually see fewer. And hopefully, as marijuana is now sold and you have to get your ID checked, you know, the drug dealer on the corner doesn't check your ID, but these marijuana stores will be tough. They won't let folks buy it if they're not of the legal age, which is 21, to buy it. So I believe that it should be reducing the use of drugs in our community, and we'll be monitoring that closely to make sure that actually happens. So this is something I worry about too, Rita, and I appreciate you asking the question.
Thank you very much. So we're, you know, getting there. We have about 9 minutes left, so we're going to switch it a little bit and go with an environmental question. We have Lorraine on the line, and she is concerned about starfish, the disease that's been killing them. Lorraine? Hi, Lorraine. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Please ask your question about the starfish.
Yes, I'd like to talk about, am I on with the who am I talking with right now?
You're on the air right now, and you're going to ask a question to your Senator Marco Lias and your Representative Lillian Ortiz Self about the starfish.
Yes, I heard this program. It's a little short program that they fill in at the end of some other program on PBS. And it said that here in Mukilteo, a woman who is an undersea photographer, was finding starfish dead up on the shore. So she went and got a suit on and went down, you know, and to discover what was going on. And there were a lot of starfish that were dying. Their bodies were falling apart. The name of that disease is wasting. The wasting starfish is the name of the disease, starfish disease. So then she went down a short time after that first initial foray down there. And when she got back that time, those poles and things that go down into the sand, you know, the earth, that support all that woodwork there at the ferries were virtually empty. It was like a holocaust of death of our starfish here in the Puget Sound. Another thing they said is all up and down the west coast of the United States here, they're finding this is happening. So it's not just here in Mukilteo, but it is happening right under our noses. Under
okay.
the water.
So, lawmakers, what do you think?
Well, this is Lillian, and I do want to say that, as I said on the Environmental Committee this last session, one of the things that we're constantly looking at is the water quality, everything from waste management, what's going into those waters, tougher regulations, holding people accountable to make sure that that they clean up in a way that does not affect our light, our sea life. And so water quality is very crucial, and we continue to look at that. We're continuing to look at it this next session, as we have, you know, especially around our ports, you know, in Mukilteo and Edmonds, we have transportation ports, and we know that things are being dumped into the water, and so that becomes a really crucial issue for us. So it definitely is one that we're going to continue to look at, and we want to make sure that all of our sea life is protected and taken care of and not have this kind of an issue. Thank you for bringing that up.
We have around 6 or 7 minutes left, so let's get to this really, really quickly. We're going to go with Edith, who has a question about urban growth.
Yes. My name is Edith. I am calling because I'm concerned about the cities
having an annex in rural areas. For instance, I live in North Edmonds. Very interesting, because North Edmonds, and it's very close to Mukilteo, and also south of us, Linwood. So what I'm concerned about is we have a large vacant lot that is on the property of where I live. Not on the property, but further west of my property, and it's near the water. It's an open lot that has been, I guess, maybe questioned before, something about the municipal urban growth area, and they're planning to do something to construct that particular area and to annex it to Linwood and also to Mukilteo. My question is, because we have many drug addicts, I shouldn't say drug addicts, but people who come there with the assumption that they can develop and grow their own marijuana, and they have been doing that for many, many months now. But we don't know how to control it. The police come, but they do nothing. They just say, well, nothing they can do. And because it's a huge vacant lot, I'm not sure if you know about that. But I would like to know, can cities really annex in a rural area? Now, I'm talking about, when I say cities, I'm talking about Mukilteo, Edmonds, Mount Lake Terrace, all of these cities. Can they do that? They are rural areas, but are they annexed per se, and are they able to have this particular area not really used for the people, but also used for other people, anyone who can come from anywhere. Some come from Seattle, and they do what they want to do.
Okay, Edith, I hate to interrupt you, but we have very little time left, so let's see if we can give the lawmakers a chance to answer this question.
Yeah, and Edith, you raise a very complicated set of questions, but it really does center around what is our community going to look like as our state continues to grow. Our planning agencies tell us that over the course of the next 15 to 20 years, we're going to see maybe as many as a million new people come to the Puget Sound region. That's the equivalent of taking the city of Portland and adding it on to our existing metropolitan area, because we've got great jobs, because we've got quality of life. So we've got to find a way to accommodate these folks and build housing and the transportation infrastructure for them. So as cities have suburban areas near them, I know they seem kind of rural to you, but the areas around in between Edmonds and Mukilteo are actually suburban. The urban areas are really in the Snohomish Valley and other places. That's where we're trying to protect it for farming and other things. In our area, you know, these suburban communities are slated for growth where it's appropriate. Now, there's some large parcels that are on steep slopes or in sensitive areas, and we're trying to protect those, things like Japanese Gulch up in Mukilteo. But it sounds like the property near you may be something that is more appropriate to be developed into some kind of housing or something else, certainly not, you know, ne'er-do-wells there. But that really is the county right now making that decision and working with the cities of Linwood and Mukilteo to talk about what that will look like moving forward. And I want to make sure that we're adding more housing, that we're adding more opportunities for folks to move to our communities, but that we're also protecting the environment at the same time and not adding more stormwater runoff and more pollution and building on slopes that are unstable. So we're trying to do a balancing act, and our counties and our cities are at the lead with that. And I think that overall they're doing a good job, but certainly if there's particular points like this property, I appreciate you bringing it to our attention, and we can chat with the sheriff and others to make sure that they're taking a look at it. So a big issue, a big complex issue, but we're doing our best to try and manage this growth and have a livable community as we move forward.
All right. Thank you. And folks, well, that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us this evening. I'll hand the phone over to your lawmakers for closing remarks in a minute. But first, I want you to know that if you did not get a chance to ask your question, or if you have a comment or a message, just leave a message for your 21st District legislators at the conclusion of this call. They will listen to them, and they will get back to you. And now let's go back to Marco and Lillian for closing remarks.
Well, I just want to say, this is Lillian, and I want to say that how much I appreciate that you took the time, every one of you, to be on this call with us. We love hearing from you. Your input, your advice, your concerns are very much valued by both of us. So thank you so much for that. I want to continue to stay in touch with all of you as we continue to look at, and I will continue to fight for economic growth, quality education, and strong families for the 21st. And I look forward to continuing a partnership where we can collaborate together to make sure we get these things done. Again, thank you so much. It's been my honor to serve you as your representative.
And this is Senator Marco Elias, just with some final thoughts. You know, I want to encourage you to leave a message. I know there was a lot of folks that had questions we weren't able to get to, so you can feel free to leave a message at the end of the call, and we certainly will look over those and consider your perspectives as we make our decisions. You know, here in the 21st District, we've actually had quite a bit of change in the last 12 months. Senator Shin has retired, and we just found out a few months ago that Representative Roberts is also retiring. So there's going to be some new faces representing you in Olympia. We've got Lillian, of course, down there, and we're going to have a new representative as well. So I hope that this is the first of many conversations as we reach out to you to get your perspectives on how you want your state government making decisions about your tax dollars and your priorities for our state. I will continue to fight for strong public schools. You know, it was those public schools that helped me succeed. I want to pay it forward and make sure that the next generation has that opportunity as well. Also making sure we're investing in transportation to create jobs and opportunity in our community. And also thinking about private sector jobs and our small businesses, how do we make sure that we have a strong business climate here in Washington for them? Those are my priorities, but I look forward to hearing from all of you by email or phone. Or we'll be planning some in-person town halls over the course of before the next session as well. So we look forward to hearing from you at any opportunity. If you see us in a coffee shop or at the grocery store, you're always welcome to say hello as well. It's always good to hear what your priorities are and hear your reviews on whether we're doing the right things or what we could be doing better. So I thank you for the opportunity to have this call, save you a rainy drive out to a town hall location, and we're able to do it in the comfort of our home. Wish you all the best tonight, and remember to leave a message after the end of the call, because we really do appreciate your thoughts.